Attention aspiring musicians of all levels from all over the world. Want to learn to play guitar or bass like your heroes? Well, I have the guy for you. Multi-instrumentalist Corey Glazer has played with Fastball, Paula Nelson, Skyrocket, me, and many more. In fact, his song Needle Hits the Groove is our theme song. Corey's been teaching for over 2 decades and is now offering his services all over the world via Zoom. So if you want to learn rock, country, R&B or funk, folk or jazz on guitar or bass, just go to CoreyGlazer.com or follow the link in the text of this podcast and start shredding on guitar or slapping the bass like a pro with Corey Glazer at CoreyGlazer.com. Let's get down. Hey gang, you ever been sitting around with your guitar trying to figure out a song, maybe by ear or maybe by memory, but you just can't quite get it? Well, I have the app for you. Whether you're a professional musician or a beginner, Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app for you. For just $2.99, you get the chords and tabs on guitar, bass, or ukulele for over a million songs, all available at your fingertips. You also get tools like a tuner, metronome, chord library, lessons, videos, and more. Just go to ultimateguitar.com or download the app from your app store and start playing today. That's Ultimate Guitar. Let's get down.
How did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Howdy.
Alright, hello, my name is Johnny, I'm your host, welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good weekend. I hope you're doing well. I hope you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy and sane. It's starting to get a little weary, man. I'm starting to get a little nuts. I have been for a while, I know I've been saying it for a while, but I'm not joking this time. Plus, man, on Saturday, I went to go do like a mental health walk. I walked 5 miles. But somewhere at about mile 4.5, I wasn't paying attention to where I was walking. And I stepped in a hole, but like in a weird way. And I did something to my knee that made it feel weird. It didn't hurt, but it felt weird for a couple of days. It was like on the verge of hurting. I was constantly cognizant of the fact that I have a knee because I could feel it. That's where I was at. So the point before pain, when you never feel your knee, I was feeling my knee. And so that was weird. So I had that go down this week. It's gone away. I'm going to go for a walk now after I do this intro. I'll let you guys know how it goes on Friday's show. I hope you guys have all had a good weekend. As I said, the numbers are going up, but it's getting freaky out there. It is getting freaky. You know, I was talking to somebody today, earlier today, and kind of talking about, they were saying like, well, the media, man, it just makes you crazy. And it does, you know, and I was like, why didn't the media used to make you crazy? And I was like, oh yeah, because the news used to come on for only like 30 minutes a day. So those guys didn't have time to fuck around. They had to come on their news show and tell you what was happening real quick. Hey man, this is what's going on. You got a guy in Pakistan. This thing happened over here in North Africa, insanity, Russia, some stuff, fire over here in North America, volcano exploded, earthquake, and it's going to rain tomorrow. Also, the Steelers won. So that's what they had. That's all the time they had. Now, this shit's like 24 hours. It's on your phone. They're just fucking telling you shit. And God forbid you click on something, because I have like Flipboard. That's kind of like my phone news app. And I go on it, and it's just constantly being updated. There's too much information. It feels like it's the end of the world all the time, because that's the only way they can keep you watching or listening or following or whatever the fuck it is that we're doing. It's insane. So yeah, if you're able to navigate that, God bless you. And if you have any advice on it, please leave us a message on our How Did I Get Here Facebook page. Also, gang, listen, on a side note, outside of the crazy media stuff, let's talk about some social media stuff. Your engagement in this show is our currency with our advertisers, okay? So the more you do with this show, go like our Facebook page. How Did I Get Here? Go like it and like the thing. And if you're a fan of Radio Receiver, or if you just are learning about Radio Receiver for the first time, share it. Share it on social media. Like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? You can also Follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I am at Johnny Gowdy. I post all of these podcasts on there, plus other things. And today, my guest is Nate Wallace from Portland, Oregon band Radio Receiver. He's also the frontman for psych rock band Hearts of Oak. So yeah, he's a band like if you're normally listening to the show, you're here from Texas, or you're used to Austin, a lot of Austin bands. This is a new band for you guys. You should check it out. Radio Receiver, fantastic band. Nate Wallace, what a great songwriter. What a great musician. What a cool dude. I talked to him, I think he was across the border in Canada in his car. And so on his lunch hour from his regular job, we have a fantastic conversation. Their album, Radio Receiver, is out now. It came out in October. And it's on Deer Lodge Records. It's available on vinyl. The record was recorded on a 16-track reel-to-reel tape machine. Just really awesome. Awesome. And Nate Wallace and I have a great conversation. He's a super cool dude. He is, as I said, a fantastic songwriter. If you don't know Radio Receiver, look them up now. I'll put links to all their stuff in the body of the text of this podcast. And without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Portland, Oregon's Nate Wallace from the band Radio Receiver. Let's get down.
There are guys, they're hard. An innocence battle. Cut the dog.
You're just visiting. How are you doing, man? You're in Portland?
I am. Technically, I'm sitting in my car in Vancouver, Washington.
Okay.
Just over the river. But yeah, I'm out here in Portland.
How are you holding up over there? It's from what I understand, there's lawlessness in the streets.
We got the COVID, of course, of which everybody's got. And then we had this forest fires going on that were really bad. So we were like for about 7 days in a row, you didn't even want to go outside. It was so smoky.
Yeah. A friend of mine was up there vacationing in Oregon and had to bail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either had to bail or you had to lock down in the house and try to keep the smoke out.
Yeah. So that's clear. The fires are clearing up there?
They're getting them a little bit. Not really. The wind has just changed direction, so we're not covered in smoke anymore.
Oh, that's good.
But the fires are still really bad, and in California too.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, great record, by the way.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Yeah, so the record's self-titled, right?
Yeah, just self-titled. It's I have another full-time band, and I kind of just made the one-off on the side, you know, and I could tell you, I got the title from a big fan of an old songwriter who's no longer alive. He was in the Kingston Trio.
Uh-huh.
There's a guy named Billy Stewart. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He had a quote said, most songwriters think they're just radio receivers or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that what you feel like, man? You feel like you're just getting stuff that's passing by?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, I don't know any other way to do it. But I'm also kind of, I've been writing songs for about 20 years, and I kind of feel like, I don't know if I cracked a code, but I cracked my own code. It's not like I can write a song on demand, but I feel like anybody could do it if they knew these little kind of ways to just grab things. Anyone who plays musical could probably write songs, and then, yeah. But I get the most enjoyment out of writing songs. I'm not the most technical musician out there. I'm not making whole records by myself or anything like that.
No, that's funny. I was just talking to somebody on the phone, and I was saying that I liked someone even though they were a virtuoso. Are you there? I don't mean that in a bad way, but you know what I mean. Sometimes you're like, okay, so you widdly, widdly, widdly. So what, man? What do you got to say? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's almost a little bit you can get. And not to name any of my cohorts out there in the world, but I find that the more you can do on your own, the more wrapped up in the minutia and the details you get. And you just don't, you know, I'm happy to write a song. I got the chords, and then I just kind of hand it off and collaborate after that. You know,
is that so, like you sit down and write?
I feel
this...
like you get...
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I pretty much write a complete song. I'm open to changing it, of course, but when I bring it to the band, so to speak, I'm in this other band called Hearts of Oak.
Right.
And we practice and write and record, and we're working on our fifth record. But I bring the songs to the guys, and if they tweak them, I'm open to that, because I feel like everybody working together on something feels that creative juice of it, and you just get a better result than instead of... That's why I can't, like, if I, but I think I'm able to do that because I don't know how to play bass. So I'm not going to tell the bass player what bass part to play.
Right. Right. But example, also, you know, like, you, ideally in a band, when you get together with people, then you're getting together with people whose instincts and tastes you trust. So you come in with your chords and your melody and lyrics. And then some homeboys like, oh, I can change this thing with this weird drum beat, and I can do this thing with this bass. And you're like, right on.
Yeah, exactly. Or even if it's a chord change in the song, like if it just flowed to here right after this little part, and I'm usually like, my ears perk up and I'm like, that's great. You know, I thought when I had my chords and the words, I was done. I didn't think that I had to try to just give it another vibe just by going to a minor chord here or there or something, you know.
Right.
So, yeah. I play with a pedal steel player a lot in Hearts of Oak, and sometimes he'll be like, hey, give me a little more room right here.
Yeah.
On the steel.
Yeah.
I wouldn't leave that room necessarily. I'm just playing the song. Yeah. So.
Is it a nice day in Portland? There's been a couple of people I've talked to during this COVID-19. Normally I do this in person, but
yeah,
obviously for the last like 6 months or whatever, I've been doing them on Zoom. But every once in a while, I do find a person in their car.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's because
of kids. Yeah, this is not... it's not because of kids. It's more because I work a 9-to-5. And I can kind of make my own schedule, so it works well. But I was stuck over here in Vancouver. So this is a weird situation where I was like, well, I think I can do this in my car.
Yeah, man.
You know, so I'm parked at a Starbucks, kind of trying to piggyback their Wi-Fi.
What is their... what kind of job do you do in the day?
It's not super exciting. I mean, I sell office furniture is the short answer.
Oh, that's killer.
Yeah, it works out. You know what I mean? I have a lot of interest in it. I think a lot about, you know, trying to be a full-time musician versus having a job and trying to balance life, and the pros and cons. And I'm an older artist at this point, and I can't really fathom trying to make a living on the road playing songs. You know, so
at this point in your life, you're not into the idea of sleeping on some strange person's couch.
Yeah. Or rolling into town at 1 o'clock to play at 11 PM at night, you know, just trying not to drink beers all day, or, you know, like, what are you
gonna
do?
Dude.
Trying not to blow all the little money that you're going to make because you're farting all day.
It's funny that you say that, Nate, because, I had this, a couple years ago. I have like my dad's side of the family, like these people, they don't know music. They don't know music people. They don't know the life. So they're like, oh man, I bet you guys end up all on drugs because you're so high after your gig that you have to stay high. And you're like, yeah, that sounds stupid. No, you get on drugs because you're fucking bored all day.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to fucking do except for like an hour and a half a day.
Yeah, and the day revolves around that.
Yeah.
You're almost lucky if you roll into town like an hour before soundcheck. Like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough.
Have you toured a lot throughout this time for the last 20 years?
Just in the Northwest, okay. You know, Seattle and the West Coast a little bit. Everything's kind of farther apart out here. So it's not like you could book.
Yeah, dude.
Like, and, you know, and we'll do, you know, we play Seattle a couple times a year. And just, you know, other towns around the coast of Oregon and stuff. So I'd say at this point we're a regional band getting out there on the road.
Yeah.
But
So dude, as far as radio receiver goes, we were talking about collaborating a little bit earlier and how you are a collaborative person since you had this different material. You chose to collaborate with a different group of people than Hearts of Oak, and this sort of like dictated this thing. Did you guys record this record live?
My vocals, the acoustic, the drums, and the bass are live to tape.
Okay.
And I think I overdubbed one vocal on a song because I sang the wrong lyrics.
Yeah, I saw
that.
Other
than that, it was fun to do it. Yeah. And then, but because of COVID and the timing, we got together and recorded in two sessions and laid down about 14 songs, 12 were on the record. And Ezra Meredith, who produced it, is also in my band Hearts of Oak. And he has a studio called the Deer Lodge.
Yeah.
And so it's real easy to record over there, but it kind of, I ended up collaborating maybe more than I meant to. Like, I was going to have Ezra record and produce it, but because those sessions happened and then COVID happened, we weren't all going to get together again till who knows when. And a couple months went by, and then I was like, Ezra, you have the tracks. You know, and I trust him to just do what he does. So it's funny, like, I went in there with this intention of making like more of an acoustic record, because my other band's more electric and psychedelic. But Ezra, like, all the guitar parts, he plays all the electric guitar and all the keys that you hear on the record. Well, so basically, all the vibe of the record he added in a way.
Yeah. Well, he's got great vibe, man.
Yeah.
Tell him I said hi.
He's a good producer and a good guitar player.
So what is that, the MSR 16S? It's a 16 track?
It's a 16 track, that's correct.
1-inch or 2-inch?
It's definitely 1-inch.
Yeah.
Yep. And we the Deer Lodge acquired that. I think this is the first record that's going to have been recorded on that, because we bought it from another studio where the guy was moving to Hawaii or something, and got a really, really good deal on it. So that was it was fun. It was fun to do this in the way I did it, because I got together with the other folks I wanted to collaborate with. May as well just name them here. We got Anna Verlet, Jason Wilmon on bass, and Anna plays fiddle and sings, and Mark Folkrod on drums. And Mark was in a band called the Deadbolts on the West Coast. It was more of a hard rock band. And he had worked at a band that recorded at the Deer Lodge one time, and that's how we met him. And then he moved up here to Portland from California. And I was like, well, I've always wanted to do something with Mark, because we just became good friends. And I'm a fan of Anna's band. Anna's in a band called Baptist Arms, which is kind of like, they have a new record. I don't know if it's out. I think it's out on Bandcamp. But they cover like that song from the True Detective intro. Like, just real moody and two female harmonies. It's great project.
Your record reminds me of whatever that style of music is.
That's I appreciate that. That's
haunting, folky, psychedelic music. Is that what cinematic?
Yeah. Where were you when I was trying to figure out that press? But because I always try not to use the word psychedelic too much, but I don't know why I get hung up on that. So it was perfect timing, like, to get together. I guess the reason I mentioned Mark moving up to up here in California, he moved in right across the street from Anna. And Anna and her boyfriend have a basement where they're in different bands. Everybody in Portland's in a band. They practice in their basement. So when Mark moved in across the street from them, I was like, oh, I think I can make this happen, just because they live not far from me. And that's half, when you get this age, that's half of scheduling.
It's proximity. It's true. It's true, man. It's interesting, because it is hard to have a band. And like, I never know how people like get started as they get older, because really you have so many things you got to do when you're young and in your teens and 20s. Yeah, you don't mind going 6 hours a day, 5 days a week into a stinking room with a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I totally know. Yeah.
And you have like a girlfriend and you got a life and stuff, and you're like, dude, I'm going to go, what am I going to go sit in a room for 6 hours with stinky dudes? Yeah.
Yep. And it was kind of fun making a record that had a start and an end. Like, I was like, we'll make this record. And I can't say, with COVID, it's kind of easy to just say, oh, we're not playing shows, but I don't think we would have played more than a handful of shows when the record came out. Maybe we still will, but I'll just go back to doing the other band, and we're working on a new record. So
good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, so, let's talk a little bit more about this tape machine, man. Cause first of all, let me ask you this. So you've been recording for the most part for the last 20 years on a computer, right?
For sure. Yes.
Okay.
This is the first thing I've ever done on the tape machine. And I don't even understand like what's going on with it, even on the computer stuff. Like, Ezra's the guru.
But the one thing I was going to say, what was it like going back to rewind?
You could physically hear, like a chunk, and then you're physically just watching the reel spin.
And you're waiting. Otherwise, it's like, hey, man, can you hit it again? Okay, go.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, if you miss the count off, or you're just like, again. You know, and then it makes it more. But that didn't bother me so much. What was interesting was like there was a unique, different pressure to get it right the first time. Like I didn't want to do a bunch of takes, you know, especially because I wanted to record kind of live, and I was like, okay, let's get this one. Like that first song on the record is 6 minutes or so minutes long. I was like, I don't want to play that song more than once, really.
We'll be here all night.
Yeah, or you just kind of lose them. I lose the mojo, I think. Like, you just, not saying the first take's always the best one, but there's a peak that happens real quick, and it's kind of downhill from there, I think.
Right, and I think a lot of musicians are different, and definitely producers are different, but there's something about the recording that's palpable. Like, when you're listening to it, like, the record does have that feeling of capturing magic, you know? Like, that's what happens when you get to perform live and interact with other people, and you're having this communication. Yep. When microphones capture that onto something forever, when everyone's doing it at the same time, you're capturing magic, as opposed to sing it eight times, I'll composite a thing, like carving out perfection as opposed to capturing magic. And your record does have that vibe.
Thank you. I feel like it has a great compliment of like whatever Ezra did post, you know, did after the fact. But it didn't lose any of that. And right. I think the tape led to that. Just, it's got that warm, but there's the first song on the second side of the record, or it'd be track seven. It's just me and Anna vocals. We shared one mic and just my acoustic guitar, which was mic separate, but that was all live. That's just one take. And there's not even two separate tracks for the vocals.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, and we did get to play one live show before the record was done, and so we did. Yeah,
how was that?
It was fun. Had a few hiccups because we'd never played. Like you've probably done this stuff over your life. You ever like practice one way all the time? You know, sitting in a circle is a great example. And you're like, let's do that on stage, which sort of works. But sometimes, if you haven't really gotten on stage and gotten all mic'd up at a club, there was just hiccups. I was convinced I was like, I'm going to use these two different guitars, which I never do, you know, just kind of, but it was a really fun show. And I think it went off just fine. But.
Yeah. Dude, I had this idea when I was 22, like, okay, I'm going to start this band that uses no amplification at all.
Yeah.
Just, we're going to go into places and people are going to have to get quiet for us. And that lasted two gigs. Then we became a rock band.
I feel like that'll work, but it has a lifespan within your set. Even you play really loud, and then you decide to get quiet, and you've got everyone's attention for X amount of time. But yeah.
So, dude, what are you from up there? Where are you from?
I've been out here for a long time, but I'm from the East Coast. I grew up in Maine, and right on the ocean up there by Canada and Maine. And I was born in Canada, but I just lived there for a little bit. And then I came out to San Francisco in the 90s. And then eventually when I'm up here, I think in 98. I've been up in Portland since then. But I didn't start playing music and writing songs or anything until I got to Portland. Just kind of timing thing. I used to skateboard and kind of switched over to playing music full time.
How old were you when you made the switch?
46 now, so I guess I was 26. I feel like I started younger than that, though. No, yeah, because two more years. Yeah, I was 24.
You started when you were 26?
I started playing, like bought a guitar at a pawn shop out here in Portland when I moved here, so like when I was 24. And just, I got the book. The book literally says Neil Young's Easy Guitar. And just learned from that. And, a girlfriend at one time got me a couple lessons, but they were banjo lessons. I didn't play the banjo for too long, though. But that helped with the finger picking and stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm self-taught, but I feel like I thought about this before we got together for this interview. I was like, have I been doing this long enough to not tell the story that I started late anymore? Because, once you're at 20 years, pretend you've done it the whole time, I guess.
Well, I mean, what were you doing before? You were skating?
Just skating and drinking beers and working odd jobs.
Like what kind of odd jobs?
Oh, in San Francisco, I worked at like a head shop called the Psychedelic Shop.
Yeah.
That was fun. And just weird random jobs, you know, janitor at a sporting goods store. Just weird stuff.
What did you think you were going to do something? Like, what were you like? Were you like, I'm just going to skate and hang out and drink beers and.
Well, yeah, I think when I moved up here to Portland, I had a buddy up here at a temporary job, and I was going to come visit him. And then I was like, San Francisco was getting too expensive in that period of the 90s. It was before the now expensive thing. There was when it got expensive one other time. And I was just like, I couldn't afford to live there. I kind of was like, you know, in an apartment with a bunch of people. And I'm like, I just don't want to do this anymore. So I was going to go back to Maine. But I came up here and got a job and just stayed. And playing the guitar was just something to do with my time. And then I eventually met some other guys who we would get together, play on a regular basis. And we started a band, and that band, this is the thing that I always find funny, is three out of the, including me, there's four of us, three of those guys wrote songs. So I naively thought, to contribute to this band, I need to write songs. You know, like that's kind of what got me into it. But also seeing how those guys wrote songs and developed things, I kind of, I think I gleaned a lot from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you seem to have also, like, you have roots. You can hear the roots, but you definitely have your own voice.
Thank you. I think you get a lot of what you put in, what you take in musically. You get a lot of the same themes and style, like everyone that I'm a fan of, I'm not trying to copy them, but. And then I've wrote enough songs myself now that I find myself copying myself a lot. Like, I'm like, oh, I use this word all the time.
Right, but, right.
But then I'm like, well, okay, that can just be a word that I'm known for using.
Right. Well, because when I say it, you also have like a distinct, unique voice and delivery that I think that even if you were doing a cover song, it wouldn't be, people wouldn't think you were ripping someone off. You know what I mean?
Thanks, yeah. It took me a while to sing confidently. It wasn't because of my voice, but once I got the confidence, I was like, yeah, this is my own. And I, you know, just made it my own.
Yeah,
and I don't look back from that. Yeah. I think of the last Hearts of Oak record got one just scathing review about the vocals. Some guy in Europe just hated it. And I was like, oh man. But then I was like, it only bothered me for a couple of days. And I was like, you know, so what? That's the one guy that didn't like it, you know? Because I do that too. I'll be like, I don't like this person's singing. And I,
yeah,
you know, so
we all do
it's
it.
Okay.
But yeah, let me
I
ask
sing
you
perfectly.
Let me ask you this question, artist to artist. Can you verbatim quote what that guy said about you?
No, but I remember just the it was a great interview of the band. You know,
right.
The pedal steel was sublime, kind of stuff like that. And every once in a while, it would circle back, but the vocals. And I was just like,
right.
Yeah.
I have one from 20 years ago that literally verbatim said, "The singer sounds like a cross between Vince Neil and Roger Rabbit."
Roger Rabbit.
Which I don't know where either one of those came from, but I was pretty, obviously I'm still a little miffed about that, but.
I got asked a question a couple days ago, and it's happened one other time. Apparently there was a metal band called Factory 81 out of Detroit in the late 90s, early 2000s. And the guy's got the lead singer has the same name. So like on Discogs or whatever, it looked like his records were the same person. So this one guy's like, I kind of can hear it. I think it's him, like referencing the way I sing now. And I went back and listened to the tracks. So I was like, yeah, I don't hear it.
So, you know, dude, we live in sister cities.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Where do you live?
Austin.
Oh, yes.
Weird, yeah. Like the weird... Whatever, like a 51-year-old dude talking to a 46-year-old dude. Both dudes are in bands. One guy has a podcast, and that's just normal.
Yeah, that's true. that's
not a reality in like Miami or Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So, what about Portland? Like, do you like that scene there? Like, when it's not COVID time, are you part actively out there seeing bands? And
for sure, as I've gotten older, you know, I have a 10-year-old son, and
oh, congratulations!
I don't go out to see bands as much as I used to, and I find this is like a selfish is the wrong word, but I feel guilty. I'm like, God, I want to go see all my friends' bands, but I can't go out six nights a week. Like,
right.
I can go to band practice, and I can play. If we have a gig, then I play a gig, and that's two nights right there. So it just kind of burns, the week flies by, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to that show. I put all the shows on my calendar, and I'm lucky if I go to one of them, you know. But the scene's really strong for support and collaboration and just talent. Like, there's great people and musicians in Portland and artists, but there's not – that's back to when we were talking about trying to make a living playing music. There's just so many people playing. Like, it's devolved into, like, the venues don't, a lot of places will just be like, oh, you can do a cover if you want, you can play for tips, but there's no guarantees that's, you know. And there's like different, it's just like Austin in a way. You've got like, we'll play bars, and then we might do two bigger club shows a year, but we can't like burn people out on like, hey, come see us all the time. Like,
right. Have you ever come down for like South by Southwest or anything?
I never have. We were maybe going to do Tree Fort, but I don't think that's happening.
What's that?
Might not happen for 2 years. That's a kind of a mini mini South by Southwest kind of festival, but it's in Boise, Idaho.
Okay.
Yeah. But it just goes back to us not really traveling. We're all adults with families and jobs, yeah. And
but there's other ways to, you know, I mean, I think the fact that like you're basically doing art for art's sake because you have something to say and you want to get it out.
Yeah. I just get satisfaction from creating. Yeah.
Sure, right. Man. To me, that's just like you're an artist, like probably more than some dipshit with an Instagram account. That's, you know what I mean? Taking pictures of themselves every 5 minutes. I'm doing something, you know?
Yeah, we
get that a lot here.
Yeah, it's tough out there. It's like it's a fine balancing act. I think I might have put in the press for this record because I remember Alex asked me a random question. I was like, you know, I remember what it was. Alex was giving me crap because I wasn't going to call this either Nate Wallace or why don't you just make it a solo record? And I was like, I don't know. I have a hard time thinking of myself walking into a record store and buying a record by a guy named Nate Wallace for some reason. So that's one aspect of it. But I also like that. I like finding old records of stuff that, you know, at least you hadn't heard of before.
Right.
So I was like, I'm making this record. I'm like, this would be cool if this record's called Radio Receiver. The title's not even on the cover, but it's on the back. But like, if you were flipping through a bin, you'd be like, that's a cool looking piece of art. And you'd flip it over. And like, it's so silly to say, but I'm like, I'm making this record in my mind for someone 20 years from now to buy.
Yeah.
Or at least that's the kind of record I wanted it to be. And I don't know. I hope that it is. But of course, if a bunch of people heard it now and it did okay, that'd be okay too.
What do you, what kind of music do you listen to? Like, what do you listen to?
I listen to, It kind of runs the gamut. Since COVID started, I didn't used to buy very many records. Like, and the way I consumed music ever since CDs went away and stuff, I didn't join any of the Spotify's or whatever. So I was always just kind of grabbing things here and there. And, but I started buying a lot of records and hanging out in the basement and listening to records. And then on Instagram, I'll post like the back of the record and write a little piece about it. Mm-hmm. And it's more like, I've just been running the gamut. Anything from like, a good example is Dead Moon. You've probably heard of them. It's their Portland band. I had never gotten into them. I was like, well, I guess it's time to listen to Dead Moon. So over the past couple of weeks, I've been listening to a lot of Dead Moon. I listened to all the Neil Youngs, the Bob Dylans. Probably my main influence is Jason Molina. I'm really into his stuff forever. And, I really enjoy his songwriting style. Back what we were saying a little bit ago about how it's okay to weave the same phrases into a lot of your songs as you go along through albums or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or same, like he's always, you know, he'll mention werewolves or the moon and shit. And just, you can always revisit these things that are coming to become your signature, I guess.
Right.
What else am I listening to? I got Michael Hurley. Have you ever heard of him?
Uh-uh.
He's a he's getting really old. He's in his 80s, but yeah, check him out. He's made a bunch of records where he drew the artwork for the covers, and he lives in the woods up here. And he's unique. That's a good artist to follow.
Is there a lot of that? Is there like hidden gem dudes just out living in the woods there?
I think there's definitely a lot of them, but he's the best example I have of one. But there's just dudes out here. Like we're Ezra and I are friends with a guy named Warren Pash, and he wrote, what's that Hall & Oates song? Private Eyes. He wrote Private Eyes. What? So it's just like weird. Yeah. There's just weird folks you run into that have done something, or, you know, and because there's so many folks out here.
Did you ever know a guy named Dave Camp? He passed away. He's a music dude, and a comic artist. Dave Camp, but
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah.
He was a really good player, and he was in, I'm drawing a blank on the name. There's a pub out here called the Laurel Thirst that's just got the same nucleus of musicians kind of over the last 20 years. And I remember Dave Camp played guitar in James Lowe's band. It's hard to say. That's how I knew of him. But he was an artist too as well, right?
He did some comic books before he passed. I know I bought a couple of them online. He was a friend of mine. He lived here for a while, and I played in his band, and we hung out a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I know a lot of the people that he knows, but I unfortunately didn't ever really spend time with him.
He was a good dude, man. He was a solid, he's a really nice guy, really good songwriter, and just a sweetheart of a guy.
That's what I hear.
Do you know Ian Moore from Seattle?
I don't.
Okay. But you get up there and play, do you know, like, you know, do you guys bro out?
we bro out a little bit. It was Stucky Jackson was the guy we played with last time we were up there. It was like over 6 months ago, but that was like a heavy blues, sludgy band. We kind of, Hearts of Oak, the other band I'm in, we get lumped into the Americana because we have pedal steel.
Sure.
But I'd say we're more of a rock band. So every time we go up there and play, we kind of get on Americana bills, which is fine, but... Yeah, I want to play with more rock bands, I think, that kind of stuff.
There is kind of that sort of more experimental and dreamy My Morning Jacket vibe to your Americana than, say, like a straight up, I don't know, Shooter Jennings? I don't know. I don't even know what... Americana at this point is like either like a band that sounds rootsy or even just a guy with a Casio. Like it, and rock and roll generally now just falls into Americana.
Yeah. And there's no, I think because we have a pedal steel player who plays not traditional pedal steel at all. You know, he has a record that just, I think it's coming out in a couple of weeks on him and another guy. It's coming out on Third Man Records, and it's just instrumental music, pedal steel. And it's called the North Americans is the name of the band. And my bandmate Barry Walker Jr. plays pedal steel on that. He's really experimental, and Ezra's guitar playing is even the same way. So when we play live, like a good example is the new Hearts of Oak record we're working on has an 18-minute instrumental song that we're sitting around kicking around like, what are we going to do with this 18 instrumental song? It's the whole side of a record.
Speaking of sides of records, before we go too far, Radio Receiver, this record's coming out on vinyl.
Yes. Yeah. If the record's getting in time, there's been a problem with the thing, and then it's just really slow. I'm hoping we'll have them in time, but I'll just ship them out to the folks who've ordered it when they come in anyway. So did you have a question about that?
No, what I was going to say, I just wanted to make sure that people knew it was coming out on vinyl.
It's coming out on vinyl. You can pre-order it on Bandcamp anytime, but it's coming out on the 16th of October.
Okay, I'll put a link to that in this podcast. I was going to ask you, man. So you have a son that's 10.
Yep.
And how do you explain what's going on? Because a 10-year-old knows what's going on. It's not like a 4-year-old where you just don't have to tell him. But
yeah, you he's not, well, first of all, I just don't, you know, he hit this, I don't know what it is about this year being so crazy, but I don't censor things from him anymore. I'm like, oh, you can watch the news if it's on the TV, you know, take in this stuff and then ask questions. And like, we don't live anywhere near downtown Portland, but we live in North Portland, and there's the protests that happen every night in downtown Portland. There's a police union office about 3/4 of a mile from my house, and about once a week they'll be like, okay, we're gonna go protest at the police union office,
right?
And it's just like, so just at 3 houses down at the back of the corner out of our backyard, the protest just marched up the street. You could just hear them coming, and we all went out and watched it. It was really pretty powerful, because the street was just solid wall of people marching by for about 10 minutes.
But you could see how that energy, if you were 10 and you didn't know where that was coming from, that could scare the shit out of you, dude. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like Frankenstein, like all the people with torches coming down the street.
Well, people who live closer to that police union office have like tear gas coming in their windows and stuff, you know, because the cops are tear gassing the protesters, and then it's drifting in the open windows because it's summertime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you say? Like, how do you let him watch the news? But I'm sure he's got questions.
Oh yeah, and I don't mean I don't let him sit around watching the news every day just because
he doesn't watch 4 hours of Fox News every night.
but no, it's out there and it's happening. Like the corner right by our house has a vacant lot, and they've adopted like the construction fence that's up there has got BLM signs all over it, and we made signs to put on that, and you know that protest happened. It's like we call it not the Karen protest, but the mom protest, because it happens from 12 to 2 every day, and it's just the moms in the neighborhood and cool. You know, different things. Yeah. But no, I don't know how to answer your question. Like, what do I say to him? Because it's like a case-by-case basis, but I don't, you know, if he wants to ask questions, he doesn't seem, I will say that he doesn't seem to want to, I mean, number one, you can make excuses like, oh, you can't go do this because of COVID, but it's almost like, you want to be like, hey, we could go do this. We could go take a hike in the woods. And he'll be like, nah. The more he stayed home, I feel like he just wants to stay home more.
Oh, yeah.
Like a sense of adventure is kind of slipping away, I feel like. But
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess I was just trying to figure out. I don't have kids, but I imagine that that having a child that is aware of what's happening at this point, especially like being in an epicenter of
this is the world that you said you wouldn't bring kids into.
Yeah, well, I mean, also it gives somebody like me hope that, well, maybe now generationally we can take away this whitewashing that's happened by people like you kind of involving their kids in what's going on, and like, hey, you know just being honest with them.
Yeah, and we've had lots of discussions about that kind of stuff, because it's like nothing's off the table, and it's at a point where when it comes up, you talk about it, and it's, I don't know. I like the fact that all this stuff's kind of happening right in the open, and at least for us. I mean, it's hard. I have to remember that there's other parts of the country where they're not seeing this and hearing it out their windows every night, but.
No. Here's an extremely important parenting question.
Okay.
Does he like this album?
I think that he does.
Okay.
When he was younger, because 10 years goes by really fast, so I've made maybe three records in that time. And I guess when he was real little, he'd be like, this is Dad's music, and he would be excited about it. But he's listening to some pretty terrible music right now on his own.
That was my next question.
It's a typical thing. Like, I'm really aware of, like, when I was growing up, I didn't want to do – perfect example. My dad's a singer-songwriter. You think I would have wanted to play and write music earlier on than when I did, but I didn't want to do the stuff that my dad did. I wanted to be into my own stuff.
Right.
So I've, like, you know, I'm like – so I'm trying to help my son. I'm like, hey, you can do all these hobbies you want to do, but, you know, if you happen to want to skateboard, you probably get spoiled rotten if you went into that sport.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
But he's like, nah, you don't want to do what you did, kind of thing. It's just natural, I guess. So I leave, you know, he was taking some music lessons, but he said he didn't want to anymore. And I'm like, ah, that's fine. You know, do what you want to do.
How far did your dad take the singer-songwriter thing? Like, what was his deal?
He played around town. I mean, he had a career in the shipping industry, and he just could, but he always wrote songs. And it's funny when we reference learning writing songs from these guys I was in a band with, you think, because I was already long since not living at home. But my dad's made a couple records, and he got really into playing. I mean, he's getting pretty old now, but when he first retired, maybe about 10 years ago, he got back into playing the bass and got joined like a jazz standards band and play like at old folks' homes and stuff.
Oh, cool.
And, yeah. And also writes his own songs, and I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'm proud of it in a way, like that I get to look at it from now. I write songs and I can see what he's doing.
Yeah. You guys ever jammed together? Have you guys ever written anything together?
Haven't written anything together, but we would get together and play in Maine, at least when I go back to visit. And
that's awesome.
A little gig at his local or whatever. But it's funny, he's really into music theory and stuff, and he'll just be lecturing me, and I'm like, oh, Dad, I don't know. He's like, this is another song in 6/8. I'm like, well, isn't 6/8, isn't that just 3/4? Because isn't it a fraction? Like, I'm so confused. I don't know.
Well, I guess he's out there jazzing it up, he must have some sort of grasp of music that's beyond a self-taught psychedelic dude.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Did you ever get into like the Dead or anything?
I appreciate the Dead, but it's funny. I used to work at that store in San Francisco, and it was Grateful Dead themed. It had the Steal Your Face in the floor, and it had these puppets from the Mardi Gras Oakland Coliseum shows.
Sure.
And I really wasn't into the Dead back then. But it's not like I didn't like a lot of the same stuff. I was a huge Bob Dylan fan. And but there was this sign on the, we had all these bootleg tapes that we play in the head shop. And there was this little index card taped to the stereo that said you had to play 80% Grateful Dead because you're picking the music to play in the shop. 10% related, 10% other. So I thought that was really funny because I'd be putting on, obviously we just played wherever we wanted to, but I always think about that. Now that I listen to the Dead a little bit more, I think it's funny that I was anti-Dead there for a little bit, especially in my San Francisco years.
I was anti-Dead. I mean, I'm 51, and then they were a thing. Like Touch of Grey came out like right after I graduated high school, like that summer. And then I had friends that were like the kids in the BMWs, that the rich kids that would follow the Dead and pretend to be poor.
Yeah,
and trade stuff for like psychedelic brownies in the parking lot of the shows and stuff.
I remember there was a girl staying at our apartment in San Francisco for a little bit that was following the Dead, and she was bought those little cheap wood boxes that you get at the head shop, and then sold them in the parking lot. And I don't know. I just remember her saying, "These boxes are selling like hotcakes or something." I was just like, "What's going on?"
Insanity. So
insanity. Yeah.
So are you gonna do some kind of like? Are you going to live stream? Do you live stream?
We're talking about doing one for Hearts of Oak. And then I'd like to do one for Radio Receiver. It's hard to get everyone together. With Hearts of Oak, we kept, for the last couple of months, we just started practicing again. We're like, our bubble was our families. Now our bubble is going to include each other.
Right.
And we'd get, with the exception of Barry, the pedal steel player, he had a baby right at the beginning of this COVID thing. So he's got a baby that's a few months old, and he hasn't, although he did play a gig with us. We played a gig recently that was interesting to play a gig during COVID.
How was that?
It was outdoors. It was a lot of fun. But this one club took over the parking lot next door and fenced it off and spaced out the tables. There's an outdoor stage. So it felt like a normal show, like once you're out there playing. But that's a rarity, like that most people aren't playing. But at the Deer Lodge, we have an outdoor stage where we'd have concerts during the summer. And so they're actually doing a live stream of one of my label mates' bands this Friday night. Awesome. So if that goes well, then we'll probably do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, man, this record is great. You're a fantastic songwriter. I love the vibe of the record. And yeah, it's fantastic. And I really did enjoy it. I checked out Hearts of Oak as well. I went through like your top Spotify jams, but a lot of those are from your last record. So,
okay, yeah, that's a natural kind of thing, and I almost think they're the same. There's not, like, I mean, you can tell if you've listened to both of those.
I thought there was going to be a huge difference, but there wasn't.
No, write the same song. It was just whether I took him to Hearts of Oak or took him over with Radio Receiver.
Sure.
I felt like the only thing I could control was the ingredient, the people. I'd be like, okay, if I put different people in there, maybe it'll sound different.
Yeah.
But
well, I also thought by the sound of your voice and the music that you were going to be scraggly with long hair. Is that judgmental of me?
I just got a haircut like 48 hours ago, but I didn't. It was just mostly the COVID madness.
Or like maybe a hat. You seemed like maybe you would be a hat guy. I saw no pictures before I talked to you.
Yeah, I do wear a hat all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, I totally wear flannel shirts, but this is like just, I just stepped out of a, like I've been in some meetings and stuff, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to jump in my car and do this Zoom meeting.
Yeah. Well, dude, it's been great talking to you, and people can get your record drops on October 16th. I'll put links to all your stuff on here, and it's coming out on Deer Lodge Records, and then
Deer Lodge Records.
Yeah, and then Hearts of Oak will be recording a new record soon.
It's happening right now.
Happening right now. So when do you have any plans for when that'll come out?
I think I'd like to have it come out in the spring. I was talking to Ezra about that. We're on this pattern where every other year the Hearts of Oak record would come out right at the end of the year. And I was like, it'd be cool to have a record that came out at the beginning of a year, and then it was, I don't know, just to switch it up more than anything.
Yeah.
But that's part of that's the blessing and the curse of having our own studio and space. There's no deadline really.
Right.
You're just plugging away at it. But
can be dangerous.
It can be dangerous.
Yeah.
But it's more of a scheduling thing. That's kind of when I did Radio Receiver, I approached it with a deadline. I'm like, we're going to do these two sessions, maybe three, and what we get is what we get.
Yeah.
But then COVID happened. Yeah. And I think we got a better record.
Well, I think it's a gorgeous record, man. And people should all check it out and listen to it. It's been great talking to you, Nate.
Johnny, thanks again, man.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. I hope you have a good rest of the day.
Likewise.
All right, brother.
Say hi to Austin.
I will. Cheers, man.
Bye. Live and let you, that's what you're
dying to. Nate Wallace from Portland, Oregon's Radio Receiver. Their debut self-titled album is out October 16th. Maybe it's already out by the time I put this out. I'm not sure. But it comes out on Deer Lodge Records. Great conversation with him. Also, you can check out his other band, psychedelic rock and roll band, Hearts of Oak. Check them out. They're all out there on Spotify and doing all that stuff. This record's coming out on vinyl. The Radio Receiver record's coming out on vinyl. So find Nate Wallace. Find Radio Receiver. I'll put links to his stuff in the text of this podcast. All right? Don't forget when you're out there checking out Radio Receiver and Hearts of Oak. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, anywhere you find podcasts. New shows every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We got the From the Vault series going on Wednesdays. They're always good. Exciting. All right, let's hear the rest of this music from Radio Receiver. New album, October 16th, available on vinyl on Deer Lodge Records. Get it. Have a great day, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down.
Paper sailor, cold and ruthless.